And Sid and Nancy, which I think was really overlooked in a way, mm-hmm. but had such great performances and was such a strong portrait of those lives.
Do you know that on Sid and Nancy, when I looked back, it didn't make my top 10 in that year? And now I'm putting in the top 10 of the decade because I realized just how strong that film. It was close to making my top 10 list, but now that film has just grown and grown, and I think you're trying, you know, this is the drug decade, or has been the drug decade, and boy, that film is strong about it.
Hi, welcome to this episode of Just the Dis. My name's Brian Sauer. This is my podcast about Blu-rays. This week, I'm talking about a cult classic called Sid and Nancy, which is newly arrived on Blu-ray from the Criterion Collection.
I'm Alan Arkush, and this is Trailers from Hell. Is it possible for an actor to be too good? So good they disappear into a character with such consummate skill that everybody thinks they are the person that they're playing. Today I'm here to talk about two terrific actors, Gary Oldman and Chloe Webb, the couple from Hell. In our trailer from Hell, Alex Cox's punk masterwork, Sid and Nancy.
Hi! Sid, we've got company!
Here they are, the lovely Nancy Spungen and the charming Sid Vicious. Sid was the bass player for the Sex Pistols, and Nancy was the love of his life. And what a life they shared. This may be the best music biopic about the least talented people ever. Nancy was a heroin-addicted dominatrix who pursued Sid after she was rejected by Johnny Rotten. Sid was a terrible musician who could barely play the bass, but was hired to be in the band because, as manager Malcolm McLaren puts it, he's a glorious disaster. In fact, he doesn't even play bass on the Sex Pistols album. Together, the love couple abuse drugs and everyone they come in contact with. Yet through the talent of writer-director Alex Cox, they are the fascinating center of this great rock and roll movie. When Sid says to Nancy, "I can't live without you," he's not just lovesick, he really means it. These are amazing performances. Gary Oldman has gone on to a stellar career in movies like Prick Up Your Ears and Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Chloe Webb was memorable in the TV series China Beach and the Ivan Reitman comedy Twins, but she was typecast, and I have been witness to producers and casting directors crossing her off of lists because they are concerned that she can only be Nancy Spungen. Alex Cox's direction of the crowd scenes is masterful. He recreates the British punk music scene and the excitement of the early Sex Pistols concerts with ironic humor. My favorite is their deeply passionate tongue kiss in a filthy alleyway as slow motion garbage rains down all around them. The second half of the movie centers on their time in the Chelsea Hotel, where addled by drugs and delusions, they stagger towards a tragic ending. The final afterlife pizza parlor fantasy is more pitch perfect than Sid Vicious ever was. To quote the Sex Pistols, "Yes, we're so pretty, oh so pretty vacant, and we don't care."
This is a movie I definitely saw in, and I've talked about these a lot, one of those cult sections at one of the video stores I used to go to back in Madison, Wisconsin, where I went to school. The local video shops that had cult sections inevitably had Sid and Nancy in them. So I always identified it as that type of movie, and I kind of have an attachment to those movies that I saw for the first time even existed via these cult movie sections. I don't know, I always pictured some punk rocker guy, I can't even describe what he would have looked like, but like putting together those sections, some guy that, you know, looked like he was straight out of Sid and Nancy, actually.
Boring, Sidney. Boring, boring. Boring, boring, boring. Exterminate!
I was putting together those video sections, some guy that had lived a completely different life than me, and so I took those sections seriously in a way because I just didn't know. I was just taken aback by the fact that there were clearly people that had a greater sense of movies and offbeat movies that I had never even heard of than I did. So I was like, oh, well, this must be an interesting movie. And I can't remember if I saw it before or after Repo Man. But obviously they're both directed by Alex Cox, who's one of the great cult filmmakers ever. Between Repo Man, Straight to Hell, and Sid and Nancy, especially just because of Sid and Nancy and Repo Man alone, makes him like one of the kings in my book.
Suppose you're thinking about a plate of shrimp. Suddenly somebody will say like, plate. Or shrimp, or plate of shrimp, out of the blue, no explanation, no point in looking for one either.
On top of that, he's like a cinephile, and a true lifelong movie fan, lover of classic cinema.
Tonight, we present the ultimate Moviedrome movie, A film that best embodies all the qualities that enable films to ascend to Moviedrome status. Robert Aldrich's Kiss Me Deadly, made in 1955. Kiss Me Deadly has cult status in extremis. Detour is an early film noir made in 1945. The director was Edgar G. Ulmer, who was born in Austria in 1900. Originally a production designer who worked in both film and theater for such names as Max Reinhardt and Alexander Korda, Ulmer came to the United States in 1931. He began his career as a director in 1934 on a studio picture, The Black Cat. Thereafter, he made low-budget films for the greater freedom it gave him. I saw tonight's film, Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia, years ago, and hated it. I saw it with a friend, Greg Herzog, now the artistic director of the Exchange Theatre in Manchester, I believe, and he was much more positive. But for me, Alfredo Garcia seemed corny, and a messy betrayal of the talent shown by its director, Sam Peckinpah, in The Wild Bunch and Guns in the Afternoon. 20 years later, I must admit that I was wrong and Greg was right. What he knew instinctively, I only figured out over the course of the years. Alfredo Garcia is an extraordinary film, perhaps Peckinpah's best after The Wild Bunch, and certainly his most personal film.
And I kind of love that about him as well. I feel like that informs his abilities as a filmmaker and his style, which he has a lot of. And I don't know, I've definitely come across my fair share of filmmakers who were movie fans, serious hardcore movie fans, who couldn't always translate that love of movies into something that interested me. And that's not to say they weren't good filmmakers, but Alex Cox is definitely a guy who makes movies that appeal to me, and I love the way that his love of all kinds of movies filters through him into the stuff he ended up making, which then filtered out into a new generation of filmmakers. I'm sure he's highly influential among a lot of present day working directors, you know, because those movies are just so interesting and unique.
AFS Artistic Director Richard Linklater. I've been looking forward to this all along. It was a tough choice, you know, Repo Man, this, or even the next year's Walker. You know, I was like, which Alex Cox to show to represent the 80s? And I picked this one just because sheer aesthetic. I wanted to see it next. So it was a very selfish. It's just the one I hadn't seen in a while, and I wanted to kind of go back to that moment. I remember being so damn excited. You know, Repo Man was just a revelation, you know, at the time. That was one of the best films, you know, of that time. And then I remember hearing, like, oh, his next film, he's doing, you know, Sid and Nancy. And I had to think back. I was a teenager when that all happened. You know, it was like such a sordid tale. You know, okay, he stabs his girlfriend at the Chelsea Hotel, ODs shortly thereafter. It was just one of those kind of, and then, you know, they had moved on. Johnny Rotten had his new group, and I thought they were sort of, I mean, it was such an incident, but it was, to me, it was sort of fading, and it was becoming kind of more of a footnote, you know, and then this movie just brought back Sid and Nancy in such a big way, or just, I kind of smiled when I heard about it. It's like, oh, cool. And the movie, you'll see, it's just like, it couldn't be more anti, like, Reagan, Thatcher, 80s, that he elevates these two, you know, I mean, you couldn't get lower, I think, heroin junkies and hanging out in hotels, killing each other, but more or less. And to elevate them and find romance and humanity, it was just so fucking awesome to watch.
He has this habit of adding moments of surrealism throughout his films, and I've always enjoyed that. I think surrealist bits are some of the best things you can do in cinema, sort of. Just take something that basically, you're plopping a camera down and watching a conversation, let's say, and then interject some strangeness, some bit of fantasy, some oddball set or location that really makes it memorable. It makes you want to go, was that a dream? Was that real? Does it matter? And so I think that's definitely something that stands out, especially in Sid and Nancy, but throughout a lot of his movies. I mean, Alex Cox also has a sense of, like, what a great shot is, you know, which you would think would be second nature to a director, but, you know, it's not everybody's bag. Some people are more conventional, and Alex Cox knows how to get a shot that will stick with you. That iconic cover shot of Sid and Nancy making out next to the dumpster with trash falling all around them is one of the great shots of 80s movies, as far as I'm concerned. And another thing that I know I forget is that Roger Deakins shot this movie.
Roger Deakins? When I was a kid, I was mad about movies, but It was a long time. I suppose my career, my life just sort of gradually grew into my dreams, really, you know? I love what Connie Hall used to call happy accidents. You know, you're in a set and suddenly the light starts slashing through a window. And even if you don't use that natural light, you suddenly think, no, that's it, I didn't think of that. So you maybe cut that light off and put a lamp to do exactly the same thing so you can have consistency. Conrad Hall was great on this. He was great on this. He said, you know, he sometimes really wanted his films to look ugly, to capture something that we don't really, that we normally shy away from in making movies. You know, ugliness can have a certain beauty as well. It's a strange sort of dichotomy going on there, really.
Which is no surprise. It looks gorgeous in spots. That shot, there's some great stuff towards the end. There's a lot of dingy, dirty motel rooms throughout the movie, and those can only look so good, but even those have a certain style to them. There's one shot I love of Sid Vicious walking along the railroad tracks with the clouds and the New York City skyline behind him. He's very small in the shot, but it's just gorgeous and powerful. Oh, another thing Alex Cox does is he loves to show people watching old movies on TV, and this used to be a little bit more of a thing in 80s movies, I think, when movies played on TV more and we didn't have streaming services and things. It was just kind of like, you know, what was on. And so you could kind of insert whatever you wanted. And people still do it, and I still love it when I see it. It's like a direct nod from either the writer or the director in the movie saying, hey, I like this movie, or hey, this movie kind of ties in to the one you're seeing. If you know it, if you know that movie well, you'll understand that I'm kind of giving you a little elbow in the ribs. So I love that stuff, and there's a lot of that in Sid and Nancy. But boy, Gary Oldman, he is truly one of the greatest actors ever, and he sort of like staggers and stumbles and slurs his way through this movie, bringing some charm to what should be kind of an unintentionally despicable asshole.
I was bored! I'm bored now! Let the bloody song up yours!
Sid Nancy, if it comes on TV and I'm channel surfing and I see a second of it, I want to just throw the television out of the window.
The Sex Pistols. Do yourself a favour.
I had no interest in the Sex Pistols. You know, I looked at it and thought, why would you make a movie about these people? But it's got its charms, great things in it. It was very, very, it's Roger Deakins' cinematography, one of his early films. But it's like just old stuff now to me.
So, I mean, yeah, Sid Vicious is just a mess as a character. You know, I don't know enough about him as a person, although there are lots of interviews with him that you can find online.
Grown-ups have just got no intelligence at all. As soon as somebody stops being a kid, they stop being aware. And it doesn't matter how old you are, you can be 99 and still be a kid. And as long as you're a kid, you're aware and you know what's happening. But as soon as you grow up, have you noticed the way... The definition of a grown up is somebody who catches on to things when kids discard them. Do you know what I mean? Like you see grown ups when flared trousers, for instance, or something like that were in the 60s or whenever it was, I don't know. Grown ups said that, and long hair, grown ups said they were awful and shocking, and you should have short hair and wear straight trousers. And now the grown ups have grown into now have long hair and think long hair is fine and wear flared trousers. We gave all that up because as soon as grown-ups follow kids, whatever kids do, grown-ups follow like 10 years later when it's become defunct, when it's become a figure of fun for the kids, it's then acceptable to grown-ups. That's why they can never ever win, because being that much older, they're that much further away from everything. They lose touch. Which is why I shall die when I'm around about 24.
And there's even one with him and Nancy in bed, just doing this whole interview from bed, which I'll probably grab a clip of.
Sydney's not interviewing me. Please try and wake up. Would you want me to make you a cup of coffee?
It's my cigars. Yeah, could you?
Yes, I'll make you a cup of coffee. But will you try and fucking wake up, no, please? No. Because we gave him an interview.
Oh,
and he wanted to have a good interview. All right? You're not talking intelligibly. You're falling asleep on your sunglasses. Wake the fuck up. He's been very ill, you know. It's hard for him to talk. I'm trying to get him to wake up and talk to you. Yeah, I've been making him rest since he's back feeding him good food.
Just
wake up.
Yeah, okay, I'll wake up. Right, now, what's the next question?
You ain't gonna drop dead, take it from me. Yeah. He's just fucked up. I mean, he's been sick for 3 months that he's been on the road. The whole time. I've been with Sid ever since the first day I ever got to England. And we're partners in crime. And we have good fun.
We wipe the shit off.
And we help each other out. You know? Okay, far away, next question. And like Sid would have died 15 deaths if I hadn't been around. Because that's just, you know, the way he is. And when he's not, this is what he does when he's not with me. It's shit when people say that he can't play because he can't. He learned all the Pistol songs in 2 weeks. It just made him want to work all the more.
So Oldman has this just incredible range. I know I've heard it said sometimes that actors don't really have range, that they can only really play kind of close to themselves. And I don't know, I feel there are certain actors that have this transformative ability, this truly chameleon-like transformative ability. And I think Gary Oldman is one of those guys because he's really able to tap into something for a lot of characters I've seen him pull out. And Sid is, I mean, yeah. He just really destroys in this role and pulls you in and brings a humanistic quality to a completely nihilistic couple. I mean, they are like nihilism incarnate, you know, just destructive and, I don't know, just very difficult people. Chloe Webb is really something else, too. She has like this, she of course plays Nancy. She has this crooked smile and this way of talking out the side of her mouth that's kind of endearing.
So what, are you waiting for a playback? How many tracks have you made?
None. We ain't done no songs either.
Why not?
Sid's still learning it.
Sid, what are you doing?
I'm eating.
No, you can't have any pizza till you finish at least one song.
Fuck home?
No, I'm serious. What are you doing here? You're in the studio. These places cost like 50 grand a minute. You could be really shining out. But what? You're just wanking off.
Wanking.
What happened to you? Did you try and kiss your mother?
None of your business.
She also says, fuck you, with more power and passion than most actors. And it reminds me that that phrase used to mean something. I'm not saying it doesn't anymore, but I feel like it's used a lot more. It was a major hit pop song, you know, it just doesn't carry quite the same fringe weight that it used to. But when she says it in this movie, it just like really, you feel it. Especially when that phone call with her mom.
Mom, guess what? We got married. Me and Sid Vicious, you remember from the Sex Pistols.
Hello, Mom. Hello.
What? No. You'll love him too. Yeah. Anyway, why don't you send us a wedding present for our honeymoon? No. We don't need any sheets. Why don't you send us some money? It's early there, right? So you could go to American Express, like, right now, before it closes, and send us $200, and then Sid could pick it up here tomorrow, like, first thing when they open. Why not? I am so married! I am! What do you mean? He loves me more than you do! Yes, I am! No! Shut up! Listen to me! If you don't send us the money right now, we're both gonna fucking die! You like that, wouldn't you? Fuck yeah!
But yeah, there's a lot of great sort of erratic energy from her. It's like a explosive energy, you know? And she really, I don't know. They make it believable. The two of them together, there's this raw authenticity, this emotional vulnerability that they both have that peeks out every once in a while throughout the movie and, you know, humanizes these pretty crazy people. And the movie is also one of those romances that feels special on its own, sort of like a movie like Harold and Maude. And obviously that's a very much very different film, where it reminds you that you can sort of march to the beat of your own drum, as it were, be your own oddball psychotic self and still find someone special and form a team with that person, you know, us against the world, as I like to call it, which is always something that helps movies find cults. You know, people that are feeling lonely or disenfranchised can take hope, I guess, from even as downbeat a story as this one.
It seems a terribly romantic portrait. It's made with a lot of love. It's written with a lot of love for that character, isn't it? That's certainly how it seems.
For both the characters, and I think probably that's a mistake too, you know, because I think both my co-author, Abby Wool, and I did tend to sentimentalize the characters a little bit too much. And so in that sense, then you run the risk of creating a sympathetic portrait of two people who really weren't very sympathetic and kind of betrayed the movement. So that scene in the methadone clinic where Cy Richardson says to them, you guys have totally screwed up and you've betrayed the movement and you've betrayed yourselves, you know, and you're worth nothing. That was the point of the film.
Because Smack is the great controller. Keeps people stupid when it could be smart.
What's she on about?
You guys got no right to be strung out on that stuff. You could be selling healthy anarchy. But long as you're addicts.
Where they are reminded that they have failed, that they have not followed through on the promise of punk and on the opportunities that they had in front of them. Because imagine what could have been achieved.
You know, because they were weak.
All they had to do was go on a program, you know.
Because they were weak?
You know, the thing about junkies, I mean, not that I know that much about junkies, but I think if you're in a junkie couple, very hard to get out of it, you know. You kind of have to split up and you have to do it individually because otherwise one person will always draw the other back in again. I can't really say they were weak because the power that drug had over them was so immense that I don't know if anybody could recover from that in the situation in which they were.
The thing about Sid and Nancy is that A, it's based on actual people, and B, it isn't really an uplifting story ultimately. Movies with unhappy endings tend to draw cults sometimes too, because so much of Hollywood films have always been focused on the idea of trying to leave you in a good place. And I think this movie does do that, by the way. I don't want to give away too much of the ending, but it goes to the surrealist, romantic path that, and I use the word resonate a whole lot, but that's one thing that the ending of this movie definitely does for me, is it allows it to be unreal and have real emotion at the same time and leave you a certain way. But, I mean, I also love how the whole movie starts. It opens like a film noir. There's a death and, you know, Sid is sitting in a hotel room, the Chelsea Hotel. Nancy's body is taken out.
Who called 911? Did you call 911? Did you call 911? It's Sal in here. Keep the fucking press back, will you?
I mean, this is literally the first scene of the movie, not to be too spoilery. And if you look it up, you know that neither of them are still with us. But, you know, we go from that opening scene with the cops interrogating him into a flashback like Double Indemnity or something. And there's a mystery at the center of the story that in real life was seemingly never truly solved. You know, who killed Nancy? Was it Sid? In the film, they have sort of a suicide pact, or was it someone else? The movie doesn't try to answer that, really, which I like in the way that it depicts that whole business. I also always forget that Courtney Love is in this movie and how interesting it is that she's obviously her own kind of, I mean, she would go on to become her own Nancy Spungen type character. I mean, supposedly she was quasi-obsessed with Nancy Spungen, I guess. I don't really know. I mean, she may have said something like, I am Nancy in her audition, I think, for this movie, and would later use the name Nancy when she and Kurt Cobain would check into hotels under assumed names. I think Kurt actually used Richie or something, which I think is Sid's real name. So he was into that whole mythology, I guess. And she was certainly somebody who seemed to get off a bit on behaving in a shocking way. So there's parts of her, from what I understand, Courtney Love, that is, that embraces the idea that she was very much a Nancy Spungen. And then there's parts of her, I guess, that rejects that idea, that seems to think Nancy was an idiot and that she is more of an intellectual and whatnot. But I find those parallels fascinating, considering the movie came out in 86 and she wouldn't even supposedly meet Kurt Cobain until 3 years later. So I don't know, but that real life imitates art, imitates real life over and over, kind of. I enjoy that kind of stuff. So before I read the special features on this Blu-ray, which was, by the way, Criterion had put this out on DVD and it became one of the most notoriously expensive out-of-print DVDs from their early run of discs before they went to Blu-ray, just after they had done Laserdisc. They had issued this on Laserdisc as well. But I remember that this was among a handful that were out of print and really expensive, like Silence of the Lambs and The Killer and Hard Boiled. Those were a big deal way back when. So it's good that this is back in print and got more stuff than ever. Just briefly, though, here, I'm going to read from the Psychotronic Guide. Here's what Mr. Michael Weldon had to say about Sid and Nancy, 1986. Story of Sex Pistols bassist Sid Vicious told in flashbacks. Gary Oldman stars, and Chloe Webb is Nancy Spungen, the Long Island girlfriend he was accused of murdering in a drug haze. This is the best, quote, punk rock movie, and it has the best Thanksgiving dinner scene since Eraserhead. Actors play Malcolm McLaren and Johnny Rotten and the other members of the Sex Pistols. Parts were shot at Manhattan's famous Chelsea Hotel, with Cy Richardson, Fox Harris, Sandy Baron, Iggy Pop, and future rock star Courtney Love as a groupie. The MCA soundtrack features the Pogues and Joe Strummer. So, one of the best punk rock movies, and I don't disagree. This new Criterion Collection Blu-ray has the following supplements or features. It's a new 4K digital restoration with uncompressed stereo soundtrack. Alternate 5.1 surround soundtrack presented in DTS HD. Two audio commentaries. One from 1994 featuring co-writer Abby Wool, actors Gary Oldman and Chloe Webb, cultural historian Grail Marcus, filmmakers Julian Temple and Lech Kowalski, and musician Elliot Kidd. The other from 2001 featuring co-writer director Alex Cox and actor Andrew Schofield. Also includes England's Glory, a 1987 documentary on the making of Sid and Nancy, which was really cool. I like this. Infamous 1976 Bill Grundy interview with the Sex Pistols on British TV. Rear telephone interview from 1978 with Sid Vicious. Interviews with Vicious and Nancy Spungen from the 1980 documentary DOA, A Rite of Passage. Archival interviews and footage and more. Plus an essay by author John Savage and a 1986 piece compiled by Cox about Vicious, Spungen, and the making of the film. So it's a really great movie, a landmark movie from the 80s, and one that I feel like is not going to be your feel-good flick of the weekend or anything like that, but is certainly worth having and watching. As, like I said, you can sort of dig out this emotional, romantic core that's in there about two people that have just sort of found each other. And I just have always liked the idea of two people finding each other, despite the trappings of it being a junkie story and there being a lot of depressing stuff surrounding that stuff. It's still a truly powerful love story and just a great piece of filmmaking. You know, just one of those movies that stands out as something you'll remember. So I highly recommend picking up Sid and Nancy on this Criterion Blu-ray. It is well worth your time. Thank you all for listening. Have a wonderful and Blu-ray-filled week, and I will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Did you know that I was a bit of a songster myself? But you didn't know that, did you?
No, I didn't.
But I've written one lately that you might like, because it has a punky sort of feel, you know what I mean?
I want a job, I want a job, I want a good job, I want a job, I want a job that pays, I want a job, I want a job, I want a real job, one that satisfies my artistic needs.
That's just the chorus.
What's it called again?
It's called I Want a Job.
Oh, lovely. Here, Sid.
I want a job, I want a job, I want a good job, I want a job, I want a job that pays, I want a job, I want a job, I want a real job, one that satisfies my artistic needs. Hey, you like it?
It's lovely.
You like it, Sid?
Stupid cunt.
That's it. Oh, no, the end is-